how to include the bio of your guest in a podcast episode is a topic of some debate in the industry. And it should really come down, as it always does, to the type of show you're creating and your goals for it, as well as your personal tastes and preferences. I've been known to say that it's best not to have your guests share their own origin story on your podcast so that you can get right to the meat of the content more quickly. As a listener of this show, you'll know that makes me a terrible hypocrite because I often start interviews by asking the guest to talk about their company and their podcast. Now, I've tried just getting into a conversation, and honestly, for me, I find it a little too awkward. And since my main goal of the podcast is building strong relationships, that's really okay. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's much better than fumbling the kickoff every week and feeling weird going into that kind of conversation. But I'm talking to someone today who is awesome at that particular strategy of skipping the intro and getting right into the heart of things immediately. It's one of the things that makes her podcast so dynamic and engaging for her audience. And she's here to give us a deep dive into the podcast that has been a key marketing strategy for her business for the last 8 years. This is The Company Show, a podcast for business owners and marketing managers whose podcast is just one of the many, many things they need to do every day. I'm Megan Doherty, one of the creators of podcastingforbusiness.com, and I'm sharing the results of our years of experience working with company podcasts, our original industry research, and talking to experts and company podcasters who have incredible insights and case studies about how to get the most out of their podcasts as efficiently as possible. Today, I'm talking to Susan Friedman, the owner of Aviva Publishing and host of the Book Marketing Mentors podcast. In this case study episode, we're going to be digging into how Susan has used her podcast as a marketing and audience engagement strategy for over 400 episodes. Susan was so generous with her knowledge and experience, and this case study is a wonderful example of how a podcast can become a fundamental part of a long-term marketing strategy. Here's the conversation. Susan, welcome so much to The Company Show. Thank you for joining me.
I'm thrilled to be here, Megan.
So to get us started, could you just tell us a little bit about Aviva Publishing and how you started it?
Absolutely. So Aviva Publishing is a publishing company. We call ourselves a hybrid publisher, that space between self-publishing and traditional publishing. And I represent primarily nonfiction authors. And what I really like to do is bring them on board, publish their book, and that is their finished manuscript. That's how they come to me, usually referred by a book coach. They would be referred to me, we publish it, get it up and running, and then what I really, really like to do, Megan, is work with the authors with their book marketing and their author marketing, and that's guiding them through the process because many times, you know, they launch their book and they do the bestseller campaign, which we do. However, there isn't the follow-up plan, and it's like, no sales, and they're like, what happened?
That's so analogous to launching a podcast because there's so much work in the run-up, and then you launch it, and then maybe launch is really exciting, but then you're just like, oh, wait, now I've just got a task to do for the next week forever, and it feels so deflating almost.
Yes. Well, in fact, I've had a question, Megan. One of my authors came to me and said, how long do I keep marketing this book? And my response was, well, how long do you want to keep selling the book? It's really dependent. I mean, marketing is not an end game. It's a continuum. It's infinite. As long as you want to keep marketing that book, yes, it won't necessarily take the same time and energy, you know, as you need to put in the beginning, because then you sort of hit a critical mass where it can take off on its own. But you've got to get it to that point first. It's not going to do it by itself.
So how long have you been doing this?
I started Aviva Publishing to publish my own works because I was in the trade show industry. And one of the things that I was taught early on, one of my colleagues at the National Speakers Association said, write a book. To stand out from the crowd, give you, you know, more credibility, open doors as a published author. And I was like, okay. And he said, doesn't matter if you self-publish it, just publish it. Now we're talking early 1990s, okay? I'm showing my age, Megan. And so I was like, okay, but if I'm going to publish a book, I want a publisher. So then I set about looking at the kind of publisher who might be even be interested in my book. And I came across a group. They were called Crisp Publications. They're out of California, and they published the 50-minute book. That means you could read it cover to cover in 50 minutes, right up my alley. This was perfect for me because I'm a tips and techniques, the 5 ways do this, the 7 ways to do that. Forget the stories and everything. It's just like, give me the fact.
Oh, you're talking my language.
That was me. Any event, they turned me down 3 times and then they took a risk on me and they published my work. Following that, and actually, okay, I sold 500,000 copies of my first book through them. I mean, I did the work. They just, you know, took the order. But that was as a result of that. And then moving forward, I wanted to publish more stuff because I was churning stuff out. I wrote regular articles. I loved sharing tips. And I just felt that this was, hey, I was onto a good thing. And nobody else was interested in publishing. So I decided to open my own company. And that was the birth of Aviva Publishing in, I think, the early 90s. And I did that, and I literally only looked to do it for my own work. And then one day I met a book coach, and he said, oh, would you publish my work? And then would you publish my client's work? And I was like, hadn't thought of that one. And then I was like, I don't see why not. If I can do it for myself, maybe I can do it for someone else as well. And so that's really when it was born. And now we are 30 plus years. We've published over 500 titles. Working with authors all over the world, and I feel very blessed. And when I lost my passion for the trade show industry, which was about 10 plus years ago, I was like, you know what? I'd like to put more energy into Aviva and work more in depth with my authors. And that's really when it took off, which is now a great segue, Megan, into the podcast.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because the next thing I wanted to ask was, you know, when in the process of running and building and developing this company, do you decide, hey, I need a podcast?
So it was actually quite early on when I heard about podcasts. And Book Marketing Mentors has been going now for 8 years. We're in our 8th year, 420 episodes. So we've been doing this weekly. The only time I took off was when my dad passed away, and I was a mess that I hadn't scheduled the podcast because it happened so quickly. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I think for 2 weeks, I didn't publish a podcast. I thought the heavens would open. It was crickets. No one mentioned it. And I was like, well, that's an interesting concept. I've been doing this now, and people didn't even miss it.
It's very possible they did, and they just didn't reach out about
it. They didn't tell me, yes. I like that one better. I think they were being very sort of polite, very British, mm-hmm. very Canadian, that they didn't mention it. Yeah, we'll go with that one. I like that, Megan.
So when you were starting your podcast, what was your main goal? Like, when you thought we should have a podcast, why did you think you should have a podcast?
The reason was as a marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And being sort of a little bit of a newcomer on the block, being in book marketing, being more openly in publishing and working with authors more in depth, with them book marketing, with their author marketing platform, I needed a vehicle, and I just felt podcasting would be a really good way. And I love doing that. I love interviewing people. As you know, we recently had an interview where I had you as my guest. And I didn't see it as me doing the ranting. I just wanted to interview people, and I thought this is a wonderful opportunity for me to connect with experts in the industry and people who could share their expertise in simple ways that would help, or practical ways, take out the simple, but it would be more practical ways that could help my authors and the listeners be more effective selling their books.
Did you ever consider doing a solo show or any kind of format other than interviewing other experts?
Well, it's funny that you should say that. I did not consider doing a separate show as a solo show. However, I decided, I think based on some of my clients said, well, I'd like to hear more of you, Susan. And I was like, okay. And then, you know, the stress level went over the roof, as you can imagine. I was like, okay, then let me do that. And I tried it once or twice with just me. And I think I read a script, and reading a script and talking, you know, a little extemporaneously in this way, this interview format, it just didn't sound natural. So then I engaged one of my dear friends and one of my editors, Jane Malucci, and she interviewed me. And she then became the host of my show. I was the expert on my own show, and it works out really well. So we try to do it once a month, but it doesn't always work, doesn't fit always into both of our schedules. However, the feedback, Megan, and I know you're not surprised, but get the most feedback from those episodes, even though they're the ones that stress me out the most, which yeah. I know they shouldn't, because I know the stuff. It's like, okay. And I do get a lot of great feedback. Oh, we want to hear more of you, and we love that episode, et cetera, et cetera.
It's what the people want. It's always more of the host in almost every case.
I couldn't see doing it every week, though.
It's funny because, you know, when you think about a podcast, often people think it'll be easier just to sit down and rattle off, you know, a 10, 15-minute solo. It's much, much harder.
Yeah. For some people who do speak well, you know, as I say, extemporaneously, I know people who do that. I'm part of the National Speakers Association, which is made up of speakers, not listeners. And so I tend to be more of a listener, and I love the interview. I love asking questions. In fact, my son-in-law teases the heck out of me, you know, and sort of tries to imitate me, you know, when I meet somebody new. And, you know, it's like I know their whole history in 5 minutes, you know. He teases me on that.
Thinking back a little more around kind of the early days of the podcast, or when you were kind of pre-launch, what sort of planning did you do around it? When you were thinking, okay, I want a podcast as a marketing strategy, how long kind of did it take you to go from having that notion that you should have this as a marketing strategy to being a regular podcaster?
I was thinking about that question, and I'm thinking it was like 3 or 4 months. You know, I'm one of those people that once I, you know, get an idea in my head, then I become all, you know, immersed in, you know, how am I going to do this? And so I was like, well, I really don't know, and I don't want to just wing it. And I actually took a course from John Lee Dumas. He does Entrepreneurs on Fire. He does one, or he used to do one every single day. I was like, no, John, I am not doing one every single day. I was like, I thought once a week would be good because there's that consistency of once a week. So I did his course, and then I was assigned a mentor who happened to be a gentleman who works at one of the Boston radio stations. So I was thrilled with this guy, you know, and he really guided me. And then it was just a matter of pulling the plug and just doing it. because I kept on putting it off. And John said, you've got to have, you know, let's say up to about 6 weeks of interviews in the can before you go live.
Almost no one actually does that. It's great advice, but
I don't know if
that's
I did.
That's amazing.
I did do a few, and they were the worst. They were the absolute worst. But I was like, you know what? I've been through this, you know, when I started in the speaking business. You've just got to, you know, get your legs and start from going from crawling to walking and falling over and hitting your head and getting up and doing it again.
And then you can always have those first episodes to look at. When I look back at our very early episodes, I want to hide my face.
Oh,
and
I know. Just...
We've even gone back and like retroactively improved the sound on some of them, except for one that had sound that was so impressively bad, we now leave it up as an example.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because I thought in my wisdom that I would pick a gentleman who is big in the author marketing or the book marketing space. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, John Kremer, who you may have heard of. And I thought, oh, you know, this would be amazing to have him. And he said, oh, yes, I'd love to be on the show, blah, blah, blah. Interviewed him. First of all, he had a crappy mic. It was a terrible sound system. And it wasn't a fun interview. I was expecting it to be so much more fun and exciting and yay, this is going to be my debut, you know, episode. And it really wasn't. But I put it out there. I was just like, okay, he's a name. It was good. And I've had several not so good episodes. And I've had, you know, now I feel they get better and better, because as a interviewer, podcast host, I feel much more comfortable now. And, you know, just like on this interview, I'm allowing myself to be me. And that's what I do when I'm on the air. I only do audio. I know people have like are very surprised when I, because we do it on Zoom, and I'm like, no. And I put it in the notes when I send it to them. This is audio only. You don't need any makeup. In fact, you don't have to get dressed if you don't want to. The fact is, they always come made up and they're like, oh, audio. Well, I wouldn't have put makeup on. I said it in the notes. I couldn't have been more clear. It's in capitals and it is highlighted.
Oh man, and if that just isn't a reflection of all of our attention span and ability to read instructions, I don't know what is.
Exactly.
I've got one more question about kind of the beginning stages, and it's when you were initially planning, maybe when you were going through that training, the Jean-Louis Dumas training, did you have in your mind a set of kind of criteria for success or failure of the project? Do you think if I achieve this, it's great, I'm going to keep going, or if, you know, I don't hit this level, it wasn't a project for us and I'm going to stop? Did you have any sort of plans around that at the beginning?
To be honest, no, I just wanted to keep going with it.
Yeah. You caught the bug.
Yeah, I just got the bug, and I knew for me that this would be the most fun way to, you know, as a marketing strategy. And I mean, I know marketing, you know, I've studied marketing and I've done a lot of it over the years. And I know what I like and what I don't like. And I love interviewing people. I mean, that's why it's kept going all this time. And I love finding new people. It's almost like a treasure hunt. And it often gets easier because, first of all, people refer other people. Plus, I'm in networking groups. Plus, I've got, you know, my National Speakers Association colleagues who you just have to ask them. And then they're like, oh, yeah. And they make really good interviews for the most part. Those ones who don't go on and on. And it was like, okay, this isn't a solo episode. You know, this is a conversation, which sometimes I have to stress. And if people go on and on, I wait for that breath to say, and Megan.
I find often speakers, they can be such excellent guests because they know when to stop is a really underrated skill in being either a host yes. or a guest, is that stop moment.
Yes.
But perfect. So, I mean, as you're a very experienced podcast host for more than 400 episodes. Incredible. Could you tell us all a little bit about kind of your production workflow, kind of going from idea to, you know, getting someone onto an interview, the editing, the posting? How does it all work for you?
So when I invite somebody, again, over the years, I've learned that I need more information from the guest because I was doing my own and that was very time consuming. So now they fill in a form. We've got an interview submission form. And I think I stole that from somebody else, or
as we all do, yeah,
adapted it from somebody yeah. else. And so I know a little bit about them. I also go in and do my own research. I go to their website. I go on Amazon. I look at their book. If I feel that I really want to know more about their book, you know, Amazon used to have this great feature, Look Inside, which they have now stopped. I'm like,
I miss
why?
Look Inside.
Because I want to see the table of contents. I want to read the introduction because that gives me everything I need to know about the book. And I like to read testimonials about the book if they've written one. No, guests don't have to have a book to be on my show. In fact, I get pitched by PR agents all the time. Oh, I've got a client who wrote a book. I said, goody, goody. And they're, oh, they'll be perfect for your show. And they've never listened to an episode of my show. And I'm like, why would they be good for my show? They wrote a book on World War II. That doesn't interest me or my listeners at this point. I want to know what that author, if they are an author, can tell me about their marketing that will help my authors, my listeners. And you can be an expert in, I've had experts on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Pinterest, on every other, you know, platform, and they don't have a book, you know. I think I interviewed this woman by name of Megan Donaghy, and I don't think she has a book yet.
Yet.
I interview people about their expertise, not the fact that they have a book. Mm-hmm. So that is a big part. And I know when people have not listened to and know and understand what the show is about. They see the word book marketing and they're like, oh, yeah, this is perfect for my
That's what I want to do, book marketing.
Yeah.
Perfect. So once you've had the interview and you've recorded it, what happens next?
I do my research. They suggest questions as well. They suggest about 3 to 5 questions. I ask for that. However, I use that sort of as an emergency backup, you know, in case of fire, break the glass. That's how I use it. I usually have a starting question to get us in. I get straight to the chase. This is a 25, 30 minute interview. I want to get to something substantive and, you know, maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't do the tell us about yourself and your history and your, you know, bit by what you had me do. I don't do that because that can take up a bit of time that I would rather use getting down to the subject. So I go straight into the subject matter. I do read a little bio, obviously, when they as an intro, but I very rarely talk about that a bio. I've done it on a couple of occasions where I've had people, you know, who worked at the White House or who did something really, you know, exceptional. They met with a president and I was like, wow, what was that like? And yes, we might talk a little bit about that. I have that starting interview and then organically, based on whatever they start saying, I usually piggyback off of that and we go off and talk about the subject. And if I feel we're going off on a tangent, I'm able to bring that back to the subject matter that we're talking about. Once it's been recorded, and I do it all on Zoom, as I said, even though, you know, it is on the video, my video camera's turned off because I've got my studio here to my right, and I take people into my studio, and so they don't even see me. They said, well, you're turning off your screen. I'm like, yeah, because you're not going to see me, you know. I've got a picture of me on my screen because they said, well, I like to look at someone. Well, look at my picture. Talk to my picture. I can't help you. Stick a model of me up there. I don't know.
That has really big talk to the hand energy, and I really love it.
So we do the recording. I do a little before we go on the air, you know, just to make them comfortable because some of them very nervous. And what are you going to ask me? And I do not want them to have organized questions. That's why I say, you're not memorizing a question. You know your stuff. I just want you to talk from your heart. And this is obviously, I've developed this and feel more comfortable over the years now with this. But I really like the way I'm doing it now and, you know, keep improving all the time. And then end the podcast. They always leave a golden nugget of information. And then I thank the guest. And then I talk about, you know, a little bit of my services. And then we end. From there, I take that recording and I might go in. And if there's, you know, some goofs that I've made, or I had a guest recently and she was young and she was very nervous. And she already said to me, well, if I make a mistake, can we edit it out? And I said, yes, of course. And she took these long pauses between questions. At one point, I'm like, are you still there? You know, since I wasn't looking at her. I take some of that out and I take the goofs out. And if I, you know, goofed as well, I take that out. And then I send it to an editor. I found an editor on Fiverr. I found her right at the very beginning. I love her. I've been using her for 8 years. And her English is perfect. She does the job. I think she's somewhere in Eastern Europe. And she puts the intro, the outro on it. She normalizes or equalizes the sound. And occasionally, if there are a lot of ums and ahs and you knows, then I get her to take some of those out. Sometimes I do a first go over with those if there are a lot of them. And then we're ready to put it out there to the world. So yes, and then I put it up on Buzzsprout. I like to do it if I can, you know, in advance. My VA really likes it if I can do it in advance. She's cracking the whip there and saying, okay, when's it coming out?
We have a saying at One Stone Creative, and it's happiness is a long runway.
Yes. So I put it up on Buzzsprout. I do, you know, I put the picture of the guest on the cover, my podcast cover, and the title. I work hard on the title. I do some SEO searches. I put it through a couple of programs to see if it's high ranking. Mm-hmm. You know, if I use certain words, they rank higher than other words. So I do put a little energy into that. And then I actually create a QR code from the website link, which I like to give my guests. So I give them, you know, the promo graphic, which is the cover with their picture and the title and the episode number. And then I do this QR code for them. And I send that off to my VA and she posts it on my blog. She sends out the email that goes to my list. We put it on LinkedIn. It goes up on automatically through Repurpose.io on YouTube, the YouTube podcast. And my platform has been linked to all the other podcast platforms, at least the main ones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the podcaster, the Apple, the podcaster, Google, Audible, Amazon.
You were saying before we got on that you're using Podpage as well, kind of as your podcast website.
I'm using Podpage as my website for the podcast. And I know you said to potentially put it on my own website. And with your help, we hopefully will be able to do that. Because I know my VAs also said, why are you doing this? You know,
it's a great project for when you find yourself just overburdened with free time. It's a great way to take care of that problem for you.
And the other thing is, I was trying to find the best tools. What do you call Buzzsprout as a...
It's the host.
The host, thank you. So I've been through a lot of those. I did LipSync and I did a couple of others. And I like Buzzsprout. It's easy to use. It's got a few limitations. And... it works. It works.
And that's what you really need from a host, is that you can use it and it works.
It works. And when it's easy and it works, that's a good formula for me. And we release it and just put out a note to the guest and say, hey, you know, promote it to your fans and followers. We send them the graphics and the QR code. We also put it on LinkedIn and we tag the guest on LinkedIn. So we get a little bit more exposure there, hopefully with their, you know, their list, their contacts. And that's about it, I think.
Thank you for giving us so much detail about that, because it's so interesting. I know, like, as someone who does this every day, to hear other people's workflows and work processes. And I know that's the case for other listeners as well. But now I'd love to dig into a little bit to your listeners and the end result. So we know who they are, basically. You know, it's nonfiction authors who want to, you know, more effectively market their books. What kind of engagement do you have with them? Like, how do you know when you release an episode? Do people, like, email you? Do they contact you on social? How do you know when something really lands with your feet, with your people?
If it really lands, I get people who email me. And the other thing is that on the podcast, first of all, I know this is something that you've encouraged me to do. You know, I was forever looking for a sponsor and you said, well, your own company should be sponsoring it. So I'm like, okay, Aviva Publishing is the sponsor of Book Marketing Mentors Podcast. Yay.
I love it.
And at the end of each episode, I do have a call to action. It's called Book Marketing Brainstorm, and it's bookmarketingbrainstorm.com, and that links to my calendar to book a 20-minute brainstorming session with me.
Amazing use of a custom domain.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great.
And I do get people who book time with me, and I'm not a detailed oriented person with regard to analysis and everything, so I'm not monitoring exactly who comes as a result of the podcast and who comes as a result of other promotions. You know, when I'm on other people's podcasts, for instance, that's the link that I give out if people would like to follow up with me and do a session, because I really like to speak to people. You know, I don't like to send out pricing or anything. I want to know what they want. I'm a people person, and I want to understand, even if I'm even the right fit for them, because the last thing I want to do is to work with someone and we're not a right fit for each other. So I make a big point of that, especially when I publish the book. We spend sometimes, I don't know, half, three quarters of an hour talking to make sure that they feel comfortable with the way we work, because our model is different from many others and our structure and everything. And I want them to feel comfortable with this.
Your work must be similar to our work in that way. And that, you know, when you do kind of take on a new client and an engagement project, it's going to be quite a close relationship for the term that you're working together. It's intimate almost, you know, there's a lot of back and forth, a lot of collaboration, a lot of communication.
Absolutely.
It's so important to start that on the right foot.
I want them to know me. I want them to like working with me and know that I have their best interest at heart. Yes, they're paying me because I'm giving, you're offering a service, and, you know, it's me, myself, and I. We're a great trio in this company. You know, we work really, really well. I've got a bookkeeper. I've got a couple of VAs who work with me. And then I've got suppliers. You know, like, for instance, if somebody needs an editor, I've got editors I work with. I've got graphic designers I work with, you know, people who design the book cover, who design the, you know, the interior layout and design. I've got companies who will print, printing companies. I've got companies who do print on demand. So I've got resources that I refer people to work with, you know, and I will refer them, and then that contractor will work with them on the finances. So I do not get involved with, oh, well, you must use this editor. No, you go interview these two editors I'm going to recommend and see which one you like best. Because, again, it's the same situation. You got to enjoy who you're working with.
Do you have a sense of how many people that, you know, book these calls? And I know you don't know exactly who's booking a brainstorm through the podcast versus somewhere else, but how do you get to have a sense of how often people have listened to your podcast before you start working together? Is that a common thing, an uncommon thing, or an always thing?
It's funny because I don't know, obviously, until they tell me. And then, like, I was on a call with an author. She published with me a few years ago, and she came back because she's looking to do a second book. And she said, I always listen to your podcast. Now, I didn't know that until she told me. So I don't monitor and say, you know, how many of you put your hand up if you listen to my podcast? And so I don't know. I know people are listening to it because it's up there in the, what did you say, the 20% of podcasts listened to worldwide. I mean, I'm thrilled. We did win an award a few years ago from Smart Blogger, who did an article and put us in the top ranking, you know, one of the top ranking podcasts in the book marketing field. They put it in different categories, but in book marketing, they sang our praises. And I love it when that happens, of course.
Well, maybe after we get on this call, you can run over to Calendly and add an How Did You Hear About Us drop down to your brainstorm booking and make it a required part
of
signing up.
That's a good one. Yes, yes. When a guest or somebody who wants to be a guest on the show, in the submission form, I do ask them which episode they enjoyed most. Mm-hmm. You know, just to for them to at least say they listened to one, whether they did or not, because they usually put the most recent one, which, duh.
I know.
I can do that too, you know.
Perfect. So let's think about a little bit about the future. What are some plans that you have for your podcast or some new goals that you're going to set? What's your next move?
That's interesting you should ask that question because, you know, I've been going week by week. I mean, I like to up the quality of the guest. And interestingly enough, I just interviewed Mark Schaefer, who is like a big, big person in the marketing field. I mean, and he's written, you know, 10, 11 books on book
I've
marketing.
I've got a couple of them on my shelf right next to me, I
there
think.
You
yeah.
go. I mean, I had been wanting to interview him for a long time and I just hadn't reached out, you know, and I'm usually not shy about reaching out. I just hadn't done it. And then I was speaking to somebody else and I don't know, his name came up and she said, oh, he's one of my best friends. I'll introduce you to Mark. So, you know, we get this introductory email. And then he writes to me and he says, yes, any friend of MK's, a friend of mine. I'm like, great, we're best friends now. So he was adorable. I interviewed him. And then I have been looking to get on other people's shows, just like mm-hmm. this. Thank you, Megan. And often it comes as a result of me interviewing somebody and they've got a show and, you know, we do an exchange that way, which is lovely. And I would like to be on a lot more. So I've actually, somebody recommended a gentleman from Fiverr. He charges $5 an hour. I'm like, and I think he's in the Philippines. I'm not sure. His English is really good. And he's been researching podcasts for me to be on. He's been sending letters out, a letter that we, you know, we approved, and he sent it out, and he said he just got this message from Nair Eyal. I don't know if you know Nair.
Oh, yeah.
So he asked Nair if I could be on his show, and Nair wrote back and said, I don't interview people on my show, which I was like, bummer.
That's a little embarrassing.
However, he said, if Susan would like me on her show, I'd be more than willing. I was like, oh my goodness. So this has put me on a trajectory of like, I'm going to interview more people who are big names. I've interviewed a few because we've got several in National Speakers Association. I've interviewed Jay Bear and Ramon Ramos. I mean, people who, there are some big names out there that a few of them I've interviewed. But I was like, you know, there are a lot more out there. So, yeah. So maybe, and it may not be every episode, of course, but, you know, we have a star. I mean, I've interviewed John Lee Dumas. He came on, and I've interviewed Ray Byrne. To be honest, I've lost track of some of the really great people I have interviewed.
I mean, with an archive the size of your archive, that's not super surprising. You know, 420 plus episodes is an incredible body of work for a show.
Thank you.
Perfect. So for someone who's listening and they are feeling a little bit pod curious and they're thinking maybe they should have a podcast for their business, could you give them one tip, one warning, and one resource they can use?
And this was said to me, this is not original, but I've taken it to heart, is that if you are going to do it, you have to commit to it and commit to it consistently. It is a consistency that builds. Chances of being an overnight success in this business is slim to none. So it's consistency. And as you've heard, mine is built over the 8 years. Megan, you probably know the stats better than me, but I think after 6, 10, 12 episodes, people often give up.
That's absolutely accurate.
I think the podcast graveyard is full of great podcasts that people just abandoned, which is a shame. And mix it up if you want to do it yourself. I'd mix it up with interviews because, you know, you can run dry or not feel like, you know, doing one. I've had days where I just don't feel like interviewing, and I've still done it, and it just gives me a buzz. So it's like my adrenaline. It's my fix. So that's consistency. Be consistent and commit to it.
Do you have a warning?
Check your mic. Check your audio. Have a good mic. And ask your guest if the mics, I can't hear how my mic sounds. Mm-hmm. I've had somebody who is in the business, sort of an equivalent of what you're doing, Megan. I get to the end of the interview with him. Great interview. And he says to me, he said, your mic didn't sound good at all. I'm like, now you tell me.
Dude.
Could you not have told me at the beginning of the episode? So there's that. And if you are recording, make sure you have hit record. I've done that too, where I have had a wonderful interview with somebody. And thank goodness, two of them were my good friends. And I had no compunction about asking them to redo it, which they are also offered to do. But I hadn't recorded. So now when I go on
feeling,
it's recording from the minute I get on to the minute I stop my interview. So then there's no forgetting to put the recording on because it's on automatically.
Excellent fail safe.
Yeah.
And one resource people should check out if they want to get into podcasting?
Well, I mean, I love my suppliers. As I say, I love using Buzzsprout. I would read up about podcasting, even to listen to other people's podcasts. Just get a sense of what you like and what you don't like and be yourself. Yeah, you've got to develop your own style. And over time, it's going to change. As you feel more comfortable with this medium, just be you.
That's a perfect note to close on. Susan, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for being so generous with, you know, your knowledge and your experience in podcasting and the work you put into developing this over, you know, getting on to a decade is an amazing lifespan of a podcast. Where can people listen to the show and check out your publishing company? All of the links that you are about to say will be in the show notes.
Super. So the podcast is on bookmarketingmentors.com. That's the podcast. And I always say, as I do in my podcast, if they'd like to talk to me, go to book 20 minutes free with me. It's complimentary. I'm not trying to sell you anything. It's literally bookmarketingbrainstorm.com. And I think those are the best, you know, links to get me. I'm also on LinkedIn under Susan Friedman with two N's, spelt Friedman, but it's Friedman. I always know when somebody calls me and says, can I speak to Mrs. Friedman?
And if you wisely take that book marketing brainstorm session, make sure to mention that you heard about Susan and Aviva Publishing on Absolutely. The company show.
Absolutely. We'll find out where they heard about me.
Right, Susan, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure was mine too, Megan. Thank you.
I love how Susan emphasized the importance of consistency. For any podcast that isn't a limited release season, it's one of the most important things to consider and something you should really commit to get the traction and see the results over time. That body of work that goes back years has done so many things for Susan's business, connecting with experts, growing her networking, serving her existing clients without having to do any specific additional work, and of course, generating leads from among people who have already heard and like the things she's had to say. It's a great example of a podcast doing multiple important jobs within a company, and it's a great show too. Make sure to check out bookmarketingmentors.com. And if you've got a book and need some support in getting it into the hands of the people that need it, book some time with Susan at bookmarketingbrainstorm.com. Do you have a podcast that's making a major difference in your business or know one that is? Go over to podcastingforbusiness.com and fill in any contact form on the site and let us know about it. We'd love to have you here for a case study episode like this one. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I've been your host, Megan Doherty, and the company show was produced by the whole team at One Stone Creative. If you've enjoyed what you've heard here today, the best way you could support the show is by sharing it with a business owner that you think should have a podcast. Until next time.